The Guardian.
Football Weekly Extra today. Uh-oh, Cardiff, as villainous Vincent Tan hires baby-faced assassin to go with his black leather gloves and earmarks 30 million for January splurge on bowler-hatted Korean and tight-lipped woman with pointy things in her boots. We get the latest on the Bluebirds, who got beaten on Wednesday by 11 Gunners, with crazy Dane Nicholas Bentner stealing the show. Boom, elsewhere, Old Trafford, Ashley Young gets mown down by a runaway Loris as Tim Sherwood's 80s tribute act conquers again. We ask, what would it take for Howard Webb to give a penalty, and will he really be peeping his whistle next in Turin? There's all the New Year's Day drama. Juan Mata kickstarted the transfer window by looking quite disgruntled, and more as we look forward to the weekend with FA Cup action and Italy's first game of the year and possibly biggest, Juventus Roma. All that and more in this Football Weekly Extra. Boom indeed. Happy, happy, happy New Year. Or as the Germans would say, mildly satisfactory forthcoming 12 months. Isn't that right?
No, that's the Irish
one. Oh, it's the Irish one. Hey, confusion ahoy here in the pod. What's all this about, Barry?
Well,
Barry Glendening.
Hello. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Vlean Nua Sosted is an Irish. I couldn't remember. I used to be fluent in Irish. It's so long since I've used it that I've forgotten. So I had to check on Google. And Vlean Nua Sosted, I think, literally means satisfactory. Have a satisfactory New Year.
All right.
Which is a bit underwhelming, but there you go.
How do you spricken it in Deutschland?
I'm not sure what you're saying, but I think you'd ask me how it has it said in German.
Bingo.
Frohes Neues.
Yes. Ja.
Happy New One, basically.
Yeah. Ja.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. That's year in German. And Paul Doyle, what do you make of Barry's Irish thing there?
I'm satisfied with it.
Okay. Good stuff. What a year it's going to be, eh? What a year it's going to be. What a dramatic start we had. Opening day of the year, all sorts of excitement. So were you across this day of action in the Premier League, Barry?
I was in the office all day. I did the minute-by-minute report on Manchester United's defeat at the hands of Tottenham Hotspur, which is probably as good a place to start as any.
It's a great place to start. Great place to start. With the Tim Sherwood, should we start with him or with Howard Webb? Let's start with Tim, shall we? That's 10 points from 12. He's inspired them, arm around the shoulder.
Yeah, I've been very impressed with him. I didn't know a huge amount about him as a fella or bloke before he got the job, and I was very surprised he did get it. But he comes across very well as a very ambitious young man who doesn't seem to take himself too seriously, which is always nice to see, because a lot of managers can be quite, I don't know, pompous and whatnot. But maybe that will come in time. But he's also playing this sort of swashbuckling cavalier 4-4-2, which shouldn't work on tactics board or on paper, say, but does seem to work in practice.
This newfangled 4-4-2. It was slightly less swashbuckling this time. He actually used defensive midfielders and that. So he's not quite as naive, if you like, as some people might have been suggesting.
No, I think that's fair to say. I mean, it's obviously very early days in his reign, but so far he's done pretty much everything right, although, what was it, just 10 days ago, he had a disappointing draw at home to West Brom. Mm. But he's done, if you look at what a manager can do, he's done it well. He's changed formation, he's made some personnel changes, he's improved the tone and tempo of the team, and his motivational skills seem to be good. So the early signs are certainly promising.
Mm.
Yeah, I was quite impressed with the work rate of the two strikers. I thought Adebayor and Soldado played really well with and without the ball. Soldado, I thought, wasn't really that type of striker who could go deep and do these kind of things, and played one beautiful ball to Lennon, who should have scored from. And I think that's the only way you can actually make a 4-4-2 work, if your two strikers are really disciplined and give you a lot of coverage.
Well, Man United came into this on the back of six straight victories, but once again, a top eight opponent proved too much for them. I think they now have the worst. Spurs were the second worst of all the top eight are facing each other, and Man United are the worst, which is, for all their recent progress, does seem to suggest there's a lot of work for David Moyes to do. He was pinning the blame on Howard Webb, and it's hard not to see his point. To what extent does Howard Webb's rather bizarre decision not to give a penalty, does that excuse Man United's failure to pick up any points at all?
Of course it doesn't excuse it. You have to be good enough to deal with the inevitable refereeing mistakes, and United side in the past would have made sure that they create more chances, more opportunities for Webb perhaps than to change his mind and and do award a penalty. You also can't look at this in isolation. If United would have lost to Spurs, which has happened before, I think only last year, Vish Borsch won against United, I'm pretty sure.
He did.
Alex Ferguson would have talked about the referee, and everybody would have said, oh yeah, it's a classic diversionary tactics, and it almost didn't matter because United would inevitably pick up again, and it would be an isolated incident, and there was no need to necessarily discuss underlying problems. But this game, if you talk about Webb, you're clearly not addressing the much bigger issue, which is that United are dropping far too many points, look very ordinary, look out of the title race on the 1st of January, and look as if they might not get into the Champions League, which is something that's never happened before. So those are the real issues. And with Moyes coming out before the game saying, I don't want to get anyone's hopes up as far as transfer signings are concerned in January, that makes for a pretty potent sort of cloud of negativity hanging over Old Trafford at the moment.
Indeed. They are 5 points currently from the top four. Paul, you just come fresh from the transfer rumour mill. What you got on a United front then?
Well, rumours of dubious merit.
Ah.
But obviously United need a midfielder. He inherited a deficient squad, the main deficiency being in the centre of midfield. Failed to address it last summer. Fellaini isn't the answer. Cleverley clearly isn't the answer as part of one of the players he inherited. So they've been linked with all sorts of midfielders and eventually they are an imposter acting on their behalf may get one.
Boom! Exclusive. You heard it here first.
Yeah.
Man United are hunting a midfielder and may get one. I think they might need a centre-back or two as well based on Chris Smalling's performance.
He was playing at right back yesterday.
Oh, well, there you go. That's exactly the problem.
But it's interesting, actually, that if you look at all the players missing from the Spurs lineup, it sort of makes their achievement more impressive. They were Vertonghen was out, Polino, Sandro, Cabal, Sigurdsson, Holtby, Andros Townsend, and to a lesser extent, Jermaine Defoe were all missing.
Right, okay.
That's a lot of players.
Wayne Rooney, he's not exactly fit, is he? He's got a groin problem. And please, no funny remarks, Rafa.
No, never.
Right.
Not for me.
He needs to give his groin a rest, says David Moyes, but he can't not use him. It's desperate times for United, as usual.
It is desperate times. I think he was asked to play sort of three or four roles at the same time yesterday. He was a number nine, he was a number 10, then he was number eight at the end, I think. And it's just too much. And I think with Rooney, he's always best, in my view, if you give him a very specific job. That can be on the right and the left, as he did in 2008 and played really well. Can be as a striker, can be as a number 10. As soon as you ask too much of him, he gets lost. And he also probably hurts his body in the long run. So it's the worst possible situation at the moment because there's no Van Persie. And we know already from last season that United very much is about Van Persie and Rooney. They completely rely on those two or either of them to produce. If they don't show up, then they've got very little, as we saw yesterday.
I just wanted to say something about Rooney playing.
Yes.
Because Brendan Rodgers praised Luis Suarez for playing yesterday, even though he said most players wouldn't have because he's carrying an injury too. I just wish more players would refuse to play when injured. For a start, all these pain-killing injections that they take and everything, they're just storing up problems for further down the line. And it's almost as bad as performance enhancement drugs, in my opinion.
Oh, interesting point. Certainly from Rooney's point of view, you do worry about this becoming a chronic issue if it's already returning every other game or so, this groin thing, he said, with no medical basis at all.
The reason, as far as I understand it, for banning performance enhancement drugs is
because safeguard athletes' bodies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, we'll have some of that then, medical stuff. Spurs... this weekend, FA Cup, they're facing Arsenal, which brings us on to Arsenal.
Hey.
Subtly done.
Right. That's a big game in the FA Cup third round. Hey, North London Derby.
One of not many.
Yeah.
That's quite an underwhelming FA Cup third round draw, in my humble opinion.
Well, we'll talk more about the other FA Cup third round fixtures later on, but that's certainly a big one, and one that Arsenal will be, I imagine, really pinpointing. Or is it, Rafa? Is it a big game? Arsenal, they haven't won a trophy in months now, so...
Of course it's a big game. Yeah. It's a derby. it's a genuine chance for both teams to win anything. Spurs won't win any other competition, although Europa League, possibly.
They are.
And for Arsenal, the question is not so much whether they take it seriously in this game, because they will, because of Spurs, etc., but whether Wenger now, maybe this year, sees the FA Cup as a genuine competition to win. Only last year, I think, they were knocked out by Blackburn in the fourth round at home, because he'd made a few changes and I think suggested to his players without ever saying it that this is perhaps not our biggest priority. And it should be a priority because it's the easiest way to win a trophy that is actually meaningful.
Oh yeah, that's so very true. There have been some tremendous games between these two teams of late. Arsenal coming into the match with a lot of injuries.
Yeah, both do, which is one reason why they can't rest as many players as they might otherwise have done.
Right.
But this year, the openness of the Premier League may actually be to the detriment of the FA Cup, because there's a lot of teams who can compete for a trophy in the league, if by trophy we include qualifying for the Champions League, which to a lot of clubs that is. So teams like Everton, Newcastle, Southampton, who may consider getting into the top four as realistic as winning the FA Cup.
Certainly worth a lot more money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Super. Arsenal, what do we make of their game against Cardiff? Unwatchable bobbins played out on a sopping wet carpet of a pitch to an audience who wanted to go home?
The first half, yes. The first half was dreadful. The second half, they upped the tempo. Rosicki had a great impact when he came on. And they showed great character in grinding out a result that I thought was beyond them at times. And it looked as if it's going to be one of those games where they can only get a point and everybody would question their mettle and etc. But I thought you now finally have to say these guys are serious contenders.
Yeah, well, they did it against West Ham, didn't they, when people questioning their character? They did it against Newcastle.
Yeah, I mean, there's an element of flat-track bulliness about them, but there might be fine in this year's league. You might not have to beat your Cities and Chelseas to still win the title, because if they drop points against lesser teams, the consistency that they have shown against the so-called smaller sides might just be enough to carry them through. I mean, they have, you look at the table now, they're first without beating City, without beating Chelsea, and it's half the season over.
There's a really interesting period in mid-March going for Arsenal, when they play the second leg of their Champions League match against Bayern Munich, and then Spurs, Chelsea and Man City are their next three league games.
Wow. Well, I just hope they get Nicholas Bentner back fit for those fixtures. I don't know why we're laughing.
Hold on a second now. Yeah. Bentner continues to be a punchline despite playing quite well. I don't understand this. He's a decent player. I mean, I know he gets in comedy scrapes off the field and whatnot, but he's a decent player. Mm. And not the idiot or the bumbling halfwit that a lot of people like to make out. I think it's just fashionable to slag him off at this stage.
I think it's a bit more complex than that, because he was clearly out of shape and not leading a professional life. So I think people were entitled to point the finger at him because he was still earning the wages of professional footballers, but not behaving like one. And Wenger, after this game, said he's finally back at the level where he can actually play him, which suggests that he wasn't for the last year or so.
Yeah, he said he's back where I wanted to be. I'm not sure if he was referring to the injury list or not.
I don't think he was. I mean, Bentner getting injured might be a good thing for Arsenal if it forces Wenger to put his hand in the pocket and make a move, because the script was already written after that Bentner goal. Wenger would have come into that press room saying, you know, we don't need anyone. We've got decent options here with Podolski and Bentner. I think Arsenal, if they could get that second top striker, doesn't even have to be a superstar, but just someone who will get you those 6-7 goals that will push you over the line, that could be wonderful.
I believe Dimitar Berbatov is.
I was just going to go. Let's go across to our rumour mill correspondent Paul Doyle for the latest on Arsenal's bid to bring in another goal scorer.
Well, today's papers.
Yes,
I've linked them with two cut price solutions. Dimitar Berbatov being the obvious one, and Hernandez from Man United. Hey. Although maybe he won't be cut price. I'm not sure how much United would sell him to, or if they'd sell him to Arsenal at all. But Berbatov would obviously be a stopgap
solution. Would that work tactically?
I don't know. He didn't flourish at United when they played a very high tempo game because he's not. But he's certainly intelligent and has the technique to slot in to Arsenal's setup and be a neat pivot up front.
Right, if they're looking for someone to play off, then he can do that.
Yeah, I think it'd be useful. The papers are suggesting they could get him for just a couple of £1 million. So.
And he's also Bulgarian, and you know we have all these Bulgarians and Romanians are going to flood into the country this week to take all our jobs. So he's already here.
Berbatov, loads more transfer stuff to come, listeners, especially on Wan Mata. But let's talk now about Cardiff and their search for a new manager, a search which could have an answer in Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, could it, Rafa?
Yeah, it looks a formality at this point. I don't think he would have turned up next to Vincent Tan if he wasn't intending to take the job. I don't think you want to spend 90 minutes next to Vincent Tan unless you're in a business relationship with him. And it was strange to see him there because he looked a little bit uncomfortable, I thought, Ole, up in the stands. And it's also strange because all the PR coming out of Norway and some of it, I think, also from Manchester United was that Solskjaer is not going to rush into a job. He's going to be very careful. He's going to pick an owner, not a club. Somehow, Vincent Ten must have found ways to persuade him.
Right. It's interesting, isn't it? The notion is, as you say, his source is Man United, that maybe he's waiting for the Man United job, where, of course, the owners are completely different to Vincent Tan. I'm not sure. How do they rate us better? Also, Vincent Tan, and I know that we don't want to swing too far on this Vincent Tan backlash, but lovely to see yesterday he dropped the leather gloves and he was wearing a nice, a fetching shade of blue jumper. There was no more of the high-waisted jersey tucked inappropriately in.
Everything is forgiven now because of that. I mean, look.
He's dressing proper.
I guess we have to be realistic. If you got a chance to manage at the Premier League in a January window where you'll be able to have an effect with some new signings, have a very decent budget for transfers, I guess it is very tempting, even if you don't feel 100% sure that this might not be the right club for you. It still looked a bit odd, I have to say. It didn't look like sort of a regular couple.
Okay, well, they've only just met. It's a first date.
That is true.
Yeah.
But the two fellas who own Molde, where Solskjaer has worked for the last three seasons...
Research ahoy.
Played a huge part in the relocation of Wimbledon to MK Dons, and one of them had done time for corruption. So it's not like he's not used to working with idiots.
Football owners are a rum bunch.
Yeah.
They certainly are. And
now, to be fair, there's no evidence, and I don't know enough about Norwegian football. I don't know anything about Norwegian football to suggest that they were bad owners when he was there. But if they were happy and, the driving force or 50% of the driving force behind the relocation of Wimbledon to Milton Keynes, then, Vincent Tan hasn't done anything that bad.
Yet. Well, in a week in which Bolton admitted debts of £163.8 million, it's clear how catastrophic financially going down can be. And that's the prospect that three teams will be facing at the end of this season. Which three, we still don't know. Fulham, as we mentioned, rocketing out of the bottom three with that victory over West Ham. And Big Sam calling out Kevin Nolan on this one for his crazy kick and subsequent red card. Paul.
Yeah, it was crazy. And just coming a few weeks after he did something similarly foolish at Liverpool. It's not what you want from your captain. However, that may be a blessing in disguise.
Another of these blessing in disguise.
Yeah, because obviously Nolan is very much trusted and loved by Allardyce, and a little like me with an old pair of threadbare jeans, reluctant to discard them.
Yeah.
He wouldn't get rid of Nolan. It's been forced on him now.
Because he fits, doesn't he?
He doesn't fit anymore.
No, I'm just saying, like your old jeans.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry.
He's going to get a four-match ban now.
Right.
Which means that Allardyce will have to find an alternative solution.
Does he have an alternative solution?
Their injury crisis is such that he's got alternative solutions all over the pitch. It's a team with no centre backs at the moment, no centre forwards, and no Kevin Nolans now.
Right.
So it's improvisation all over the shop, which is why I don't think a lot of people are calling for Allardyce to be sacked. Personally, I don't think I concede that there is a case for bringing in a new manager, but there is a much bigger case for bringing in new players. So if you are going to sack Allardyce, might as well do it now at the start of the transfer window, so the new man can choose which new players to bring in.
Right.
They obviously bungled their transfer dealings in the summer, insofar as they put all their eggs in the Andy Carroll basket and didn't get sufficient depth, which Crystal Palace were big enough to admit that they got theirs all wrong, but they had an excuse, what with being quite surprised almost by their promotion. West Ham should have had more experience and savviness than that.
Mm. How was the atmosphere at Craven Cottage? Presumably it was absolutely rammed, mostly filled with Fulham's new coaching staff.
I think Shahid Khan is obviously trying to change the structure of the club, putting more football people in positions where they can maybe take on some of the duties that another club would solely be vested on into one manager. And I think that's, generally speaking, the right way to do it. And obviously, coming from the States, he'll be used to a setup where there's not just one guy controlling everything, but loads of different people. Whether these are the right people to take Fulham forward is very hard to say. But I think that the general idea is quite a smart one.
All right. Well, they're now 2 points above the bottom three after a busy round of matches at the bottom. You had Crystal Palace, disappointing for them only to get the 1-1 draw with Norwich. Norwich were wondering why Shamak wasn't sent off, though, in that match for a fairly violent shove on Houlihan.
Yeah, he should have been sent off.
Mm. West Brom, that was a huge win for them against Newcastle.
Yeah, and Debussy sent off for a horrible challenge.
Yeah,
and his apparently sincere, genuine and total conviction that he had done nothing wrong afterwards was a sight to behold.
Mm.
I think he was saying to referee, we're in England, we're in England.
Well, I'm interested by this because, you know, the way we sometimes joke about players making stupid tackles to have Christmas off.
Ah.
I haven't actually done any statistical analysis, but I will to see if there's increased incidence of stupid red cards around the festive periods, because just like there's more muscle strains and everything because players' bodies are tired by the hectic schedule, I wonder if slight mental fatigue makes players more irascible and they do things like Kevin Nolan and Debussy did yesterday.
Right.
That's my 2-second theory.
All right, well, looking forward to hearing the results of that research. Sunderland, what happened there? Was it post New Year's Eve?
Well, I had this time as a game that I thought they'd win it at a canter. Well, I thought they'd win it, but Lee Cattermole made a mistake early, and that cost them the goal. And after that, he was just terrible, and was hooked at half time. He was playing so badly, and he tends to be their best player when they're on the rare occasions they play well. And when he's not playing well or when he's suspended, they don't tend to do so well. So it's a very disappointing result.
There's a chronic haplessness about Sunderland that has relegation written all over it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Even when they're playing well, which they have generally been doing under Poyet or Courgette, whatever it is.
They
continually undermine themselves with stupid red cards, silly mistakes, bad refereeing decisions against them. So they look doomed.
How about Villa, though, eh? Because they, Fulham and West Brom, the big winners, they rocket up Villa all the way to 11th. They're now 6 points above the drop.
Heading towards my prediction of 9th.
Yeah. Was that your prediction, Barry? Was it?
9th, yeah.
Okay. All right.
They beat a very bad team that was playing poorly. I wouldn't read too much into it, although Christian Benteke, by all accounts, played well. Which is a heartwarming sign for Villa fans.
Certainly is. Now, other results include Liverpool beating Hull, no great surprise there, featuring Luis Suarez's smashing free kick. Swansea losing at home to Man City. Nice performance from Swansea, could do with a better finishing, do you think, although Boney's scoring a few goals now?
Yeah, but I think the real story was City
being
very imperious again and very impressive and seeming to have got over their problems away from home. Perhaps not fully because they do concede goals, but they have enough on the other side of the pitch to then hit back and still win games. I think they are the genuine thing, and they're showing why they were most people's title favourites at the beginning of the season.
Well, as you say, that's the bigger point. Another away win for Man City, which narrowly edges out the fact that Michael Laudrup's morphing into George McFly week by week as the main headline grabber. He is, though. Have a look at that. Did we mention Stoke Everton? No, we didn't yet. And how about Asayidi? That's three goals now for Stoke. He's quite the lone signing, isn't he, for the Potters?
Yeah.
Southampton-Chelsea, then, just to finish off our Premier League roundup from New Year's Day. Ha. Huh. Mata gets basically yanked off to, what, 5 minutes into the second half?
Mm-hmm.
And he looks, for the first time, visibly distressed by this decision. He kind of flips his fold-up seat impatiently and makes a kind of wavy hand gesture in the vague direction.
Flipped his seat?
He did.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and he also kind of waved a hand in Mourinho's direction. And the commentators were, at this point, going, well, you can see his point. Mou's clearly wrong on this poor chap, etc. But within a couple of minutes, the commentators going, I think Mou may have made the right call, because, bingo, your two subs come on, Willian and Oscar, and they... Well, the game turned at that point. Was it because of them?
It's impossible to tell, James, because we can't replay the game with Mata and see if Southampton would have folded anyway. But the decision was certainly vindicated, but that doesn't make it any less explosive because Mourinho, for the first time afterwards, came out and came very close to saying that, yes, he would be willing to countenant offers
for Mata.
Do they?
Apparently.
That's the suggestion. They need to sell before they can buy.
Because they're falling foul of financial fair play due to ongoing losses. And plus, Mourinho clearly doesn't fancy Mata.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Not dynamic enough, apparently.
They made the financial fair play regulation just. So I think you're right. I mean, with the outlay that they've had, they might have to generate some money. At the same time, I think Mata, the problem is that the biggest suitors for him would all be teams that Chelsea do not want to strengthen in January. You don't want to sell him to United. You don't want to sell him. I don't know if Wenger is still interested. He was a few years ago. You certainly don't want to give him to Arsenal. So where can he realistically go? He can only go to Spain.
Inter Milan. Or PSG.
Yeah.
Yeah, both. Well, of course, because Chelsea might that way get their hands on Inter's prized asset, Freddie Guerin.
Yeah. What a great swap that would be. Great deal. I don't know. I mean, I think for Mata, it's becoming increasingly obvious that Mourinho, for whatever reason, whether they be football or non-football related, doesn't see him as a regular player.
Yeah.
And if he's got any chance of staking his claim for Spain with the World Cup coming up, I think he needs more games.
What do you think is? Do you think it's football or non-football, Rafa? Come on.
I mean, I can certainly see why Mata does not fit the Mourinho mould of a player. I think he is a little bit like Mesut Ozil, that he's a bit too much of a floater for Mourinho's taste. Defensively, doesn't really offer that much. Comes in and out of games a little bit. I think Mourinho talked about isolated moments of genius or isolated moments of impact a few months ago. And Mourinho wants a different type of relentlessness. I mean, now he loves Hazard because Hazard has started to perform regularly, and even without the ball, looks like a player who's hungry to get back on the goal and attacks the space constantly. Mata, when he gets the ball, doesn't attack the space. He'll step on it, look for somebody, plays it off somebody. So I can see all the arguments why he's not necessarily the greatest fit. But you just wonder with Mata's reaction and from the moment that Mourinho came in, there was this debate that the two might not get on, whether there isn't that bit much more involved. And I think Duncan Castles, who has very good contacts close to Mourinho, wrote that there is a suggestion that Mata was somehow being punished for being friends with all the Spanish internationals who Mourinho partially blamed for his downfall.
No.
In Madrid, and it sounds very vindictive and unprofessional. that football very often is, I'm afraid.
I've got a suggestion. How about he rejoins Rafa Benitez at Napoli? How about that? And does Napoli have a player that Chelsea could use? Well, only Gonzalo Higuain. Gonzalo Higuain. They're doing all right without him anyway. They did fine in that second half. They didn't seem to be missing matter at all there, no?
Well, he's not. He's been a very peripheral player this year.
Right. But Oscar and Villian look fantastic.
Yeah, they did. I mean, I think Oscar has been having a really, really good season, his dive apart. Villian, who's had a slow start, I think it's fair to say, is now coming into his own, looked much better already against Liverpool, and I only saw highlights, but apparently was a real turning point when he came on.
In this game? I know, it was extraordinary. Once those two came on, the whole game just turned around. And on the dive, I mean, we were criticising Howard Webb, but what a great call by Martin Atkinson, because watching that, I think everybody thought, wow, that's a penalty, and probably the goalkeeper's got to go at this point. But and fair play to Moo, who did say, yes, it was a yellow card and justified.
Yeah, I think he had no choice. After
I don't know. There's always a choice for Mourinho.
Yeah, but I think in this case, he had no choice after painting himself as the defender of British values. This is a direct quote from the Liverpool game. Even with his cheek, he wasn't able to gloss over that one.
All right, then.
Why didn't Oscar... Well, this is a rhetorical question, obviously. But why didn't Oscar just score a goal? Is that now a striker's first instinct to go to ground and try to win a penalty rather than score?
For some time, it's not been that uncommon to see a player see an opportunity to go for a penalty, and rather than, which is an easier option than actually trying to put the ball in the net.
It was a choice between getting a goal and getting a goal and the player sent off.
Absolutely, yeah. On a Chelsea note, leads from Cobham suggests that Lampard and Ivanovic are going to be out for at least a month. Which is interesting because they've got a big FA Cup game coming up this weekend, which we're going to tell you about right after this. FA Cup. You want big games, Barry? I give you big games. Let's see.
I'm going to a big game.
Are you? Which one are you going to?
Macclesfield.
Hey.
Against Sheffield Wednesday.
All right, there you go.
It's the one everyone wanted, but I got it.
You lucky chap. Romance ahoy.
Macclesfield have only been in the fourth round once in their history, and that was last season when they were beaten by the eventual winners, Wigan.
Right. Apropos of whom, Uwe Rosler's Latic side came up with a big win this weekend. They beat Derby, didn't they? Steve McLaren's Derby, who'd been on a run of, I'm going to make up numbers here, I think they've had 5 wins and a draw in the last... Well, they've been on an incredible run. Basically, he came in and won every single game, pretty much. But they lost to Wigan this weekend. And that's quite interesting. And
a 9-match unbeaten sequence.
It was 8 wins and a draw. There you go. How about that for Steve McLaren?
Yeah.
Yeah. And how about Uwe Rosler now at Wigan?
Yeah. I mean, Brentford... to make perhaps the more pertinent point, haven't missed him.
Right.
Which is quite surprising.
You and your more pertinent points, I was coming on to them
in a
second.
Yeah. Sorry, James.
Yeah.
Wigan is a side who I think can just squeeze into the playoffs, possibly, but it's going to be tough.
Right.
He took them over in a position where there isn't really that much hope, I felt. But maybe with one or two options in the transfer market in January, he can do it. He's certainly a very good manager. I think there's any doubt about that. He's the type of manager that every club now in Europe wants, who's young, really hardworking, scouts the opposition within an inch of their life, great motivator of people, but also tactically very astute. He's like a sort of complete package, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if we saw him in the Premier League very soon with or without Wigan.
Right, okay. They are the cup holders, of course. Is his name being tatted around in the Bundesliga as well?
Not in the Bundesliga. He had one or two options in the second division to go to, and he turned them down. Mm. That was already before going to Wigan. But he's certainly somebody that people look at and keep an eye out for.
Right. Well, as I say, victorious against Derby this weekend. Derby will be hosting Chelsea. How about that? Interesting.
So not interesting.
But you're not interested in it. Which cup ties have got your attention then? Man City going to Blackburn?
Not very many, I have to say. Everton QPR sort of stands out. Macclesfield Wednesday, just because I'm going to it.
Leicester could win at Stoke, perhaps. But again, it's so difficult because you don't know what sort of teams anyone's going to put out.
Man United Swansea. It's a fixture.
Yeah. Arsenal, Spurs, obviously, and Sunderland are playing Carlisle. That's a derby of sorts, and you'd kind of fancy Carlisle.
It's a bit of a shame. We don't know whether to take any of these games seriously. Is that
a shame.
I think Man United, Swansea is serious because of Man United's predicament in the league. I think Moyes needs a result and a performance of some description to at least buy himself some time. And Swansea...
They like a cup run.
They like a cup run. And I think, as we've seen already from United, at home, when they are supposed to dominate the game and create the opportunities, they really struggle. And Swansea are the kind of side, even though they're not at the level that we've seen from them last year, who can maybe cause a bit of an upset.
All right. Anyway, back to your more pertinent point, which is about the fact that Brentford are now taking 37 points from 39. Here's Johnny Crane saying, I would like to think Brentford's stunning form was worth a mention on Thursday's Football Weekly Extra. Well, you're right. You're right.
Yeah, and Mark Warburton has come in, the sporting director, to take over the team, and they are still looking for a manager, but, you know, if he keeps on going and takes them up directly, I think Brentford might rethink their long-term strategy.
How much is that? It's just the momentum of the good groundwork that Uwe Rosler had laid.
And Warburton himself, because they follow the continental model, and he is the guy who came up with a lot of these signings, you know, the likes of Trotter. I mean, he's been there now for a couple of years, but players, he's very good at finding players who are reserve players at Premier League sides, who are very good, can't get into the team, but would obviously improve a team like Brentford. And that's where I think some of the key work has been done. They've got a very good squad. And of course, I think they have a great togetherness, despite, or perhaps because of what happened to them last season. Mm. A little bit like a lesser version of Bayern Munich in the 2012 Champions League defeat, etc. You could see that they are desperate to make amends for what must have been a very traumatic end to the season last year.
Well, certainly looking forward to seeing how all those games play out over the weekend. A little bit of other news just before we sign off. One is to say that there's quite the situation developing down in Rome, where Lazio got very upset because their manager Vladimir Petkovic signed up with the Swiss national side, really, while, you know, still having a job with them. So they considered that grounds for dismissal and dismissed him. But his lawyer has now said, and appointed Eddie Reha, who's the man they'd previously lost before. Eddie was fond of resigning on the way to the airport to go to away games, that kind of thing. He was a man whose heart was... He had mixed feelings about being Lazio manager because it's a fairly tempestuous place to manage. Anyway, he's decided to come back now, and they're not doing too well, are they, Lazio? But anyway, the complication is that Petkovic, the previous man, has had his lawyer put out a statement saying that he's proudly still the Lazio coach. So I'm really looking forward to next Monday when there'll be two managers jostling for position on the bench. But
what is Lazio's problem? Because he's only coming in after the World Cup, isn't he?
I imagine it. I'm not absolutely sure. His contract must have been beyond the end of the season then. Lazio's problem was that they didn't like the fact that he conducted a negotiation with the Swiss FA without consulting them. And as I say, they regarded that as a good reason to fire him. But he doesn't seem to think so. So I guess there might be a court case in Lazio's future.
Do you think that this is just an excuse to fire him without paying compensation? That they wanted to get rid of him and use the Swiss?
Lazio? Lotito?
Yeah. Is that possible?
It's extremely possible, but they often do try and cut corners financially with people, and they usually lose in the courts straight afterwards.
How well known is it that Lotito doesn't pay his players sometimes when he just gets upset, when he doesn't like the performance?
He just doesn't pay them? Known? No, I don't think that is widely known.
Yeah, I mean, I can...
He just doesn't make their payments.
Yeah, I can confirm that certain players...
So Miroslav Klose, for example, might not...
No, not I don't know about Klose, but a couple of years ago, when Reha was there the last time, when Lotito didn't like one or two players' performances, he said, well, you wouldn't get paid this month.
Right, well, this was the reason that Goran Pandev and one other player took him to court, and he was also suggesting that because he didn't like their attitude, and he wanted them to take pay cuts, which they refused to do. So he effectively, we did what the Italians called mobbing and put them out of the team. And they took him to court, and he had to release them from their contracts. So they got free transfers. Mm. Panda went to Inter and then Napoli, and Lazio effectively lost a lot of money. He's also a man who managed to convince the Italian authorities that they could accept back payments on the... on the tax that Lazio hadn't paid over the course of the next 25 years. So he's clearly a man who knows how to count his pennies. Yeah, good stuff. Anyway, that's all very exciting. Serie A getting back underway next Monday, except for Juventus and Roma, who in a startling move have had their match brought forward to the Sunday evening, just so that we can feature it on BT Sports. We didn't have anything otherwise. Anyway, so Juventus against Roma. This is huge because, of course, Juve are now 5 points clear at the top, but the only team that looks capable of challenging them are Roma. Juve have won their last 9 games in a row in Serie A. They've got Andrea Pirlo coming back. Tevez has returned from Argentina. And there were suggestions. I mentioned this briefly at the start. Il Tempo, the Italian newspaper, there's always an issue over the officiating, especially in a Juve-Roma game. There's been loads of controversy over the years about how refs might favour Juventus. And their solution was to bring in a top foreign referee just to safeguard the equanimity of official decisions. And their pick was Howard Webb. How about that? Howard Webb. You're nonplussed, aren't you? But he's not. I don't think he is actually going
to. Is Howard Webb actually a good referee?
Well, supposedly. That's what it says on his...
I think it's just... I mean, he's probably one of the better ones in England, and possibly the best, but I just think it's more his appearance. And that he's a policeman.
He's bald like Kalina.
Yeah, he's bald like Kalina. He's a policeman. He's carries himself well and looks very authoritative. But I'm beginning to wonder if he's not actually... great.
He certainly seems to get quite a lot of things wrong, isn't he?
A lot of referees get a lot of things wrong, and it's totally understandable, but because players are constantly trying to gull them and the speed the game moves at.
For a man who's officiated a World Cup final, you'd think that he might set his bar
a little
higher.
Didn't actually cover himself in glory in that World Cup final. I mean, Jose Mourinho seems to have him in his pocket at this stage. You know, he knows, he sends his players out to injure people in the first 10 minutes of games, safe in the knowledge that Howard Webb won't send them off.
Ding, 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 ding. Lawyer alert.
Allegedly.
Anyway, that Juve-Roma game looks a brilliant one, whether or not Howard Webb is in charge of it. Also, because Roma, you remember they went on that amazing start to the season where they won every single game and then began to run out of gas because the injuries started to pile up. Gervinho was out, Totti was out, Destro was out, Pjanic, but they're all back. They are all back as they head up to Turin this time, and I reckon Roma are going to do it and bring it back down to 2 points. Exciting. Boom. That's it then for today's Football Weekly Extra. Many, many thanks for being with us as we kick off 2014. We'll be back on Monday, so do join us then. In the meantime, it's thanks, producer Ben. Thanks, Paul Doyle. Thanks, Raphael Hornigstein. And thanks, Barry Glendenning. And hope you have an entirely satisfactory time until we next speak to you.